Developmental Alternatives with Women for a New Era, OIDON, is a network of feminist scholars, researchers and activists from the economic south working for economic and gender justice and sustainable and democratic development. This recording is done by Dawn as a way of sharing its feminist critical analysis of the global environment through the voices of women from the south. Other recordings are available for download at www.dawnnet.org and may be used freely following proper citation. Dawn Podcasts, the voices of women creating a just world.
We're going to move from Africa and with the inspiration of Trotsky to Latin America to Nicole, who will speak on the paradox of growth and persistent inequality under Latin American progressive governments.
Hi, everybody. Well, my presentation will have three main points. The first is to speak a little bit about the post-neoliberal progressismo context, or progressive context. Then to discuss a little bit about the structural challenges that we identified. And finally, some concluding remarks that I hope then we can discuss in the debate. So, this is South America, and the world is now showing really a tendency of a multipolarity, and Latin America, especially, it's increasingly seen as an emerging region that's moved forward towards, for example, regional integration and the construction of its own institutions, such as regional economic blocs or institutions, for example, the Bank of the South. Since 2003, several progressive governments have been democratically elected in the region, and this implies a deep changes in the democratic culture that has led, for example, that an indigenous its president has been elected in Bolivia, and the election of women president in Chile, in Argentina, in Costa Rica, and recently in Brazil. For example, the 2005 rejection of the U.S. initiative to create a free trade area in the Americas and the withdrawal of some governments from the International Center for Settlement of Investment Dispute of the World Bank are important things for the construction of new alternatives. So in this region that is different from Africa and in Asia and the Pacific, because, for example, now we are like celebrating 200 years of independence. So this is a huge difference that always Sonia Correa addressed. And so there are social movement and states have more gymnastic and lesson learned from the past. So in the region we have a lot of left-wing governments or central-left government. Also we have now in Chile a right-wing government, and Colombia still fights and very trade liberalization approach it has. But we have to really to acknowledge that after almost a decade of progressive government in great part of the region, there is a sustained reduction of poverty, mostly explained by the increase of social expenditure and implementation of social policies. So it's also important that the role of states in this post-neoliberal period, it's really, really important. For example, 220 million, please. People live in poverty in 2002, and by 2010 the number was reduced to 120. And this downward trend of the poverty rate slowed in 2009 due to the global financial crisis, but continued as you see maybe in the slide that continued to be reduced. For example, in Brazil, 15 million of new jobs were created in 8 years of government from the PT, and 28 million of people come out from the poverty. So these are facts that we can deny. So it's a really a big change. Although the region has learned to deal with external volatility, it still has strong weakness to face long-term structural challenges in order to transform the development model that continue to be based in commodity export and extraction. So the first challenge that I would like to share with you is this issue of the primarization of the economy. Because this development model is still based on productive specialization in natural resources, on the attraction of FDI, foreign direct investment, and on export focus on commodities with low added value. Extractive activities in mineral resources and fossil fuel continue to be central, as it was in the neoliberal period. So we say that it's a primarization because growth is still based on the primary products that are exported. And what is also a worry is that the fact that commodity prices are still high favors the terms of trade of regional export, but also discourage the export diversification and the possibility to move to a knowledge-intensive sectors. So in this context, this turns into an illusion for a sustainable development in the region, because the international division of labor remains unquestioned. The second big problem for our region is that Latin America and the Caribbean is still the most unequal region in the world. This is a quote of UNDP, besides being high, inequality within the region is persistent over time and reproduces itself in a context of low socioeconomic mobility. Advance in human development and poverty reduction are evident in many countries within the region, but global numbers hide important inequalities regarding territory, gender, ethnicity, and race. So regarding women's situation, their income is lower than men, unemployment is higher among them, and they are overrepresented in the informal economy and precarious employment. Indigenous people and Afro-descendants are poorer, less educated, have lower incomes, and are restricted access to social services such as health and education. These inequalities also intersect with territorial disparities that generating big social inequality gaps. So it's very interesting that, for example, ECLAC analyzed how social hardship is distributed throughout the region. So you can see all of this interlinkage in specific regions. In South America, for example, the map shows extremely high concentration of inhabitants under the age of 18 with serious hardships, especially in the Andean and the Amazon region, which cover vast territories where between 80 and 100% of the population is in this situation. So lack to access to education, to social services, to full employment. In Mexico and Central America, the greatest hardships tend to occur in areas which are large indigenous population. For instance, southern Mexico and Guatemala. So this is also very important because our recommendation of policy should include this territorial dimension to really have impact on the life of people and to really to eliminate this special segregation that our, for example, big cities in Latin America have. So a combination of these two factors, the model, the economic model, and the inequalities, explain that we have growth without employment. And so this is another figure from ECLAC that says that gap regarding income, access to social security, and employment stability are due partly to the difference in productivity between the different sectors. High productivity sectors within the region, like mining industry, electricity, and financial sector, represent quite a reduced percentage of formal employment, which has stayed particularly stable between 2008, from 7.9% moved to 8.1% of formal employment. On the contrary, participation in formal employment in the medium productivity sectors, such as industry and transportation, is reduced from 23.5% 10% to 20%. And what is worse is that at the same time, there is an increase in participation of low productivity sectors, agriculture, construction, commerce, and services, from 79% in 1990 to 69% to 71% in 2008. As a result, the increase in the proportion of workers in low productivity sectors has an impact on the quality level of society, since it tends to generate a more unequal distribution of salaries in favor of a smaller group of workers with more development of capacity. So the disparities in Latin America are huge, and the economic growth model has too much. It's very important to understand this trend. And finally, there is another issue that it's very important, is that Latin America has a regressive tax structure, because most tax collection is related to consumption and indirect taxes, and registers a low tax burden on income and personal wealth. Both of these factors affect income distribution and are detrimental to most vulnerable sectors of society. In order to increase social expenses and promote policies that tend to reduce gap, it is necessary to transform the tax structure and burden so it has a higher distributive impact. In Uruguay, we have a very good example on how tax can be it's a social policy, because in the last administration that the government continued to be center-left, they really made a transformation, a tax system that is progressive and not regressive. So people who earn less money pay less, and people who earn more money and have more properties and everything have to pay more. And just now in Uruguay, there is also a discussion, because this has a very good redistributional effect. So now the government is trying to move forward and to reduce the VAT tax for essential consumption goods like milk. And they're discussing this. What is the better to continue to have a progressive taxation system? The other big challenge is related to climate justice, environment, and economic growth. And this kind of false dichotomy between growth and environment. As I already mentioned, Latin American pattern of productive specialization in natural resources demand a lot of energy and implies an increase in the emission of greenhouse gases. Production and consumption systems in the region are highly dependent on fossil energies. As data from 2007, Latin America was responsible for 8% of global emissions. But recent data shows that percentage has increased to 12%. And the high percentage comes from deforestation and agriculture and livestock activity. Given the central role of agriculture in our economies of the region, there is a significant political resistance to discuss possible change in this sector. So it's important to mention that economic growth is still like a flag in Latin America, and many times the representatives of the governments say that when they have to choose between environment and development, and development understood as economic growth, they choose development. So it is interesting to discuss whether that dilemma really exists, or if it's possible to build a society with general well-being without growth, or with growth in low-carbon sectors. So in this dilemma, agro-export model still to be promoted in the region, and this encouraged the expansion of monoculture, especially soy, sugarcane, palm oil crops, and the increase of concentration of land, increase of foreign ownership of land, deforestation, replacement of small productive family farms for urban areas. For example, in Latin America, but in Uruguay, the demand of agrofuel has increased an explosion in the rural property market, where foreign investment groups are very interested. In Uruguay, the production of agrofuels is currently focused on ethanol from sugarcane, soybean for biodiesel, and through plantation to produce cellulose and ethanol. When Argentinian government increased export taxes to agro-export sector, some investors came to Uruguay and started to buy and renting productive land. So these dynamics are very interesting in the region about tax and profit. And small farmers are now renting their land for soybean crops because it's highly competitive and it's all the time they spend in the dairy sector trying to have agricultural development at the local region is threatened because of these high prices that really, if you don't have any policy from the government to support small farmers, this is like easy money to have and quickly, and so it's very difficult what to do with that, and so this have a consequence in the replacement of family farms to the urban areas. And what it was for me, I was worried when I went to Dakar to the World Social Forum, but I heard Lula's speech when he was there. He was like a very paternalist speech towards Africa, and saying that the benefits of the agro-export model from Latin America, he was really trying to sell the model to Africa. So this is also important to discuss the contradictions in Latin America, but also between South-South countries, and how, depending on which party you are, depending on the speech you have. Just to finalize in this point, really Latin America should improve participation in global negotiations, in COP global negotiations and Rio Plus 20, with their own regional agenda, in order to take coordinated initiatives of economic environmental improvement. This requires that each country has a defined political commitment regarding the policies needed to deal with climate change in general and in with the negotiations in particular. But also, this needs also that social movement and ecological justice movement and people who are working on the idea of living well, most from the Indian countries, really press and advocacy for this agenda, because our Latin American governments are not taking our agenda. Just to finalize, I think the climate change makes more evident the need for a new paradigm that implies a new way of think production, consumption, redistribution, and generation and use of energy, and also what kind of energies. So it's necessary to look for a sustainable model of economic recovery, growth, and development. And this strategy based mainly in commodity export turns the economy vulnerable to the fluctuations of trade and international prices. It's important to move to an economic growth model based in low carbon and cleaner sectors. And so the service sector can be an option for the region. Regarding the persistent inequality, an important element to consider is the right to education and its potential role to the reduction of social gaps and the breaking up of the intergenerational reproduction of poverty in Latin America. Access to education has an impact in the reduction of inequality. To achieve this, it is essential to broaden preschool education coverage and guarantee the entrance of boys and girls and teenagers to education systems and their permanence. This is a huge challenge in Latin America, as well as guaranteeing access to lifelong learning and updating opportunities throughout life. Finally, it's important to combine economic justice debate with ecological justice movement and well-being and summa causa debates. Marta, she will also later on explain a little bit about this. And so the Latin American consultation on GIJ that we will hold in Montevideo from the 19th to 21 March will provide a space of communication and a mutual understanding among these different actors. Policymakers, feminists, as well as ecological and economic justice movement in the region. So, thank you very much.
For more information on the work of Dawn, do not hesitate to contact us. Our email address is info@dawnnet.org.